Black Friday, wow, shop Wayfair now. Month-long big deals, yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong, check out the song. Best in decor, Black Friday scores.
Garlands and trees,
saving with ease.
Lights for your house, lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets that are you. Everything home, these things in chrome. Hands of the clock, area roads. Fast shipping, wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season, win the season.
Wayfair, 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 Wayfair.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Well, as of our recording, Halloween is upon us. And this story is one that has fascinated me forever. The ghost story initially. You've heard the ghost story. You've seen the movies, the book covers, the haunted house case, all of that. But before any of that, before the word Amityville became shorthand for demonic possession and green slime and Hollywood horror, there was a real family. A family whose story ended not in whispers from the beyond, but in gunfire. This is the truth behind the DeFeos, the real people who lived and died at 112 Ocean Avenue. We're going to tell that story. We're going to tell that story right now for you. You may not know it, because obviously there's been a lot of clutter out there on this topic, on the story of the Amityville horror. Here's a real horror. Ronald and Louise DeFeo were in every sense the image of 1960s success. He was an Italian-American, Brooklyn-born, old-school Catholic. She was quiet, polite, and came from money. Her father, Michael Brigante Sr., owned a successful Buick dealership in Brooklyn called Brigante Carl Buick. They married young. They had five children. They worked their way into comfort. In 1965, Ronald Sr. and Louise bought the house that would one day become infamous, a sprawling Dutch colonial with a boathouse on the Amityville River. It was the kind of place that made neighbors nod with envy. Big front lawn, pristine white shutters, an in-ground pool, the kind of home you bought when you made it. To the outside world, the DeFeos were a respectable, well-off Catholic family. But inside that home, things were a little less idyllic. According to reports, over the years, Ronald Sr. was known for his temper. Relatives described him as loud, strict, and a man who needed to be obeyed. He ruled the household through intimidation. The kids were expected to be polite, silent, and grateful. It wasn't unusual to hear shouting coming from inside the house. Neighbors later told reporters they heard arguments, father and son, father and wife. But in suburban America in the 1960s, that wasn't something you called the cops about. You just shut your blinds and turned up the TV. His wife, Louise, by most accounts, tried to keep the peace. She was described by relatives as kind and patient, the glue of the family. But she deferred to her husband in everything. When he barked, she quieted. When he raged, she meditated. They had five children, Ronald Jr., nicknamed Butch, Dawn, Allison, Mark, and John Matthew. Five kids, a boat, a new car, every couple of years from the outside. It looked like the American dream. Inside, it was pressure. Perfection had a price. Ronald Butch DeFeo Jr. was born on September 26, 1951, the firstborn son. And for a while, the pride of the family, his father doted on him as a baby. But as he got older, that pride turned to scrutiny. Butch wasn't a straight-A student, the football captain, or the easygoing heir his father wanted. He was moody, temperamental, and angry. By elementary school, teachers reported behavioral issues. He was quick to lash out, easily frustrated, sometimes violent. Taking after dad, are we? But we don't look at it that way back then. By his teens, he was overweight, insecure, and isolated, mocked by classmates for being weird and angry. At home, things were worse. The shouting matches between father and son became a near daily event. Family friends said they'd see Butch leave the house shaking with rage. One friend recalled him saying, "If he hits me again, I'll kill him." It wasn't a confession. It was a warning that nobody took seriously. Ronald Sr. demanded obedience and respect. Butch gave him defiance and resentment. That constant clash, father versus son, control versus rebellion, was the defining rhythm of the DeFeo home, allegedly. By his late teens, Butch was drinking heavily, using LSD, and eventually heroin. His parents sent him to a psychiatrist, but he quit after a few sessions. He didn't think he had a problem. Everyone else did. Despite everything, his father kept him close, giving him a well-paying job at the family's Buick dealership. It was mostly symbolic. Butch rarely showed up, but when he did, he'd get into arguments with employees and then disappear for hours. He had a steady paycheck for no work, a setup that only deepened his sense of entitlement and failure. By 1974, Butch was 23, still living at home, using drugs daily and falling deeper into delusion. He owned multiple guns, including a 35 caliber Marlin rifle he used for hunting. And every person in that house, his parents, his siblings, has become, in his mind, part of the problem. The tension inside 112 Ocean Avenue had reached its limits by the fall of 1974. A few weeks before the murders, a strange event took place. Butch and a coworker claimed they were robbed while transporting nearly $20,000 in cash from the Buick dealership to the bank. Police found inconsistencies in his story, and Ronald Sr. publicly accused his son of staging the robbery. It was a humiliating moment. Witnesses said the two screamed at each other at the dealership, their argument spilling into the parking lot. It was one of the last known explosive confrontations between father and son. After that, Butch's friends noticed a shift. He was agitated, paranoid, erratic. He'd flash his guns, talk about killing his father, then laugh it off. He'd fall asleep at the bar, wake up, and start all over again. People in small towns always say, "We never saw it coming." But in Amityville, they did see it. They just didn't think it would really happen. Then in the early hours of November 13th, 1974, something broke inside Ronald DeFeo Jr. Sometime between 3 and 3:30 a.m., he picked up his 35 caliber Marlin rifle and began moving room to room. He shot his father twice in the back as he slept. His mother, Louise, heard the noise and woke. Two more bullets ended her life seconds later. He then moved to his brother's room. Mark, 12, and John, 9, were killed in their beds. Then to his sisters, Allison, 13, and Dawn, 18. Both were shot once in the head. Every victim was found lying face down in bed. None had defensive wounds. Toxicology reports later found no drugs or sedatives in their systems. The question of why none of them woke up remains one of the lingering mysteries of this case to this day. And is, by all accounts, rather haunting. When police tested the rifle, it had no silencer. The neighbors, just yards away, claimed they heard nothing but the barking of the DeFeo's dog that night. That eerie silence, those undisturbed bodies. It's the detail that keeps this case feeling unnatural. But the reality was coldly human. Butch DeFeo methodically executed his entire family, showered, changed clothes, and went to work at the dealership the next morning as if nothing happened. At 6:30 that evening, Butch walked into Henry's Bar, a local hangout, and declared, "You gotta help me. I think my mother and father have been shot." A group of patrons followed him back to 112 Ocean Avenue. They entered through an unlocked door and found a scene straight out of a nightmare. The entire DeFeo family murdered in their beds. Butch collapsed on the lawn, sobbing. He told police he believed the killings were a mob hit, that a local loan shark named Louis Finelli had done it. Detectives weren't buying it. There were no signs of forced entry, no ransacked rooms, no missing valuables, and when they found unspent rifle shells in Butch's room, the story began to crumble. Within hours, he confessed. He said, "Once I started, I just couldn't stop. It went so fast." When asked why he did it, he said, "The voices made me do it." The trial of Ronan DeFeo of the trial of Ronald DeFeo Jr. began on October of 1975, almost exactly 1 year after the murders. His defense attorney, William Weber, argued insanity. He claimed his client heard voices commanding him to kill, that he was possessed, delusional, not responsible for his actions. The prosecution countered that he knew exactly what he was doing, that the murders were planned, methodical, and deliberate. Psychiatrists for the defense diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia. The state's experts disagreed, labeling him antisocial and narcissistic, but sane. The jury took less than a day to decide, and on November 21st, 1975, Ronald DeFeo Jr. was convicted of 6 counts of second-degree murder and sentenced to 6 consecutive life terms, 25 years to life for each. He would spend the rest of his life behind bars, giving dozens of interviews over the years, each one contradicting the last. In some, he said his sister Dawn helped, and that he killed her in self-defense. In others, he claimed his mother killed the children, and he killed her. Later, he said he was framed. In truth, if there ever was one, remained buried with his family. When you strip away the supernatural noise, what's left in the Amityville case is the anatomy of implosion. A house built on control, a father who equated fear with order, and a son who internalized humiliation until it became rage. A mother who tried to keep peace in a war zone, and a community that saw cracks forming, but chose to believe the picture-perfect postcard instead. Ronald Jr. grew up in a house where love and approval were conditional, based on performance, compliance, and pride. When he failed to meet that standard, he replaced acceptance with dominance. That's a psychology that often brews beneath familicide. The belief that the only way to regain control is to destroy everything you can't control. It wasn't demons. It wasn't the house whispering. It was the slow erosion of identity inside a family too proud to admit it was broken. For the people of Amityville, the shock was seismic. Families that had once waved the DeFeos at church or watched their kids play in the yard now locked their doors and pulled their children closer. The house sat empty for months, unsellable, its blood-soaked reputation spreading faster than the truth. Eventually, it was renovated, its address changed to shake the association, but the stain remained. And that's where most people stopped caring about the DeFeos, when the story pivots to hauntings and headlines. But if you look at the crime without the horror filter, it becomes something much more familiar and much more frightening. It's a story about control, about silence, about what happens when a family stops being a family and becomes a pressure chamber. Ronald DeFeo Jr. spent more than 45 years in prison. He married 3 times while incarcerated, filed numerous appeals, all denied, and never settled on a single version of events. In 2021, he died in custody at the age of 69. The cause of death was not publicly released. He left behind no confession that satisfied anyone and no final truth, just more questions. Why did he do it? Was it hate, fear, revenge? Or was it simply a man who'd lost every piece of himself long before that night and decided to take the rest of his family with him? Today, the Amityville house still stands. The shutters are painted, the address is changed, the new owner's private, and the eye windows are gone. But the myth refuses to die because the truth is harder to look at. It's easier to believe the house is cursed and to accept that a family can collapse under its own weight. The DeFeos weren't cursed, they were human. And they were trapped in a system of silence, pride, and generational pressure that turned love into obligation and fear into control. That's the real horror of Amityville. Not ghosts, not demons. A father who demanded obedience, a son who couldn't live up to it, a family who mistook fear for love and paid the price in blood. When we look back at the DeFeo murders, we shouldn't be asking what haunted the house. We should be asking what haunted the people inside it. Because the truth isn't cinematic, it's quiet and human and absolutely terrifying. There are no bumps in the night, just years of unspoken resentment, quiet rage, and emotional decay. And sometimes it's all it takes to turn a home into hell. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. You'll find us. Make that same search wherever you get podcasts. so you don't miss any of our coverage of the many current cases that we follow. I thought I'd throw this one in for good measure for Halloween. It's a fascinating case, without a doubt. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.